वो निरंजन के पास।
हाँ, निरंजन के पास। और ये
वो फोटो कॉपी करके ले नेक्स्ट वीक। बट नेक्स्ट वीक यू आर नॉट कमिंग,
एग्जाम
एग्जाम इज नेक्स्ट टू नेक्स्ट वीक राइट? नेक्स्ट वीक यू आर नॉट कमिंग
बट टुमारो आल्सो वी कैन सेंड ना बाय सीनियर।
या या यू कैन जस्ट ऑल राइट
सो
स्टार्ट।
गुड मॉर्निंग एवरीबॉडी। My topic for today is the story behind the three laws of motion, which was given by Newton. So let's begin with the history. First, I'll talk about Aristotle. As everybody know, that Aristotle had a categorical mind. Means he liked to categorize things. So according to his means, he also categorized motion. So basically, let's start how he looked at how he looked at physics. According to Aristotle, the four basic elements were there were four basic elements: earth, water, air, and fire. So on that basis, he placed earth, means he ordered them on the basis of their heaviness. Earth at the bottom, then water, then air, and fire. So then on this worldview, he explained motion. So he said that whenever a motion would occur, it would occur in a straight line, and his principles regarding motion were mere just common sense. Means what he observed, he just explained it. First, means he told that whatever motion occurred, it occurred in a straight line.
What
straight line? But he explained it according to his theory. He was just explaining a straight line motion. That's why he was facing problem with projectile motion. That will come. Okay. First, he said that every object has its natural state, state of rest. Means, if an object has attained its natural place, it will stay there as long as any force means until any force is applied to it and it, its position has been changed. Means this explained that for a motion to occur, there must be an a mover which would move that, means an external body which would carry that motion. Then according to him, there were three types of motion. One was natural motion, second was unnatural motion, and third was natural, a force motion, and a voluntary motion. Natural motion means if I drop a object, according to his worldview, it would fall on the earth because its natural place is over there. That's why it is a natural motion, because he is just attending its natural motion. Then a forced motion. Forced motion means just picking up a body, means the body is at its natural position, just displacing it from its natural position. He explained that it was a forced motion. So, and voluntary motion were carried out by living animals. Means, I want to go there, I will move there. That's my voluntary motion. Then, corollary means natural motion. Okay. Then what all means arguments are there, and now there was a means the then people thought of another type of motion, which was a projectile motion. He explained that first of all his major argument was that force is the one which generates velocity. Means force is proportional to velocity. if you are giving a force to a body, it would attain a velocity and it will move. And he also told that to carry out motion, force is required. So, but after and then he many people commented on projectile motion. So he on projectile motion he argued that whenever you throw an object, you give a velocity, so it moves, and after that the air is the medium which helps to propel that body further, and it moves and falls down. This was the explanation given by Aristotle in the late BCs. But in the 12th century, when few philosophers from Paris proposed their theory about which was called as impetus theory. While I am telling about this theory, please keep in mind that Aristotle told that to drive a body, force is required. So, in impetus theory, mainly proposed that to motion is maintained by a property, which is a property of a body, which is given to it at the initiation of a initiation of its motion. So means the after giving an impetus to the body, it will maintain its motion, and once the body is in motion, it would try to maintain its motion unless and until that impetus is wear off, or it just decreases down and vanishes off. This was the first theory which explained something about inertia. Means it gave a hint about inertia. It was by Nicholas. I don't know the first name. It was Nicholas and Buridan. Then according to this theory,
contemporary of Descartes. Slightly older than
Galileo. This theory challenged Aristotle theory, that they told that if air is propelling a projectile forward, but according to Aristotle theory, air should act as a resistant to the body, because Aristotle told that the body will stop its motion due to the resistance of the medium. But this theory challenged Aristotle theory. So on the basis of projectile motion and projectile motion, they discarded Aristotle theory about motion. And if you take an arrow or if you hit it, then according to Aristotle, after leaving, means you have provided a force, and after leaving it, force you have applied a force. After that, it is moving on its own. But according to Aristotle, as soon as you leave it, it should fall down, because you are not applying any force. Air will not drag it. Aristotle told that air will propel it forward. Means the samjha? क्या हाँ ना, इसलिए तो गलत बोला ना उन्होंने, क्योंकि air is giving the resistance, it's not propelling the body to move forward. On the basis of that, impetus theory proved that Aristotle theory was not enough to explain all this motion. So according to Buridan's theory, the impetus theory, they told that
Aristotle has this propelling, and the propelling is a very interesting coherent example. Like, suppose if the body is moving this way, okay, since according to Aristotle, vacuum is not possible, right? So if the body is moving this way, behind you are leaving some space empty. So what happens? Air will come and occupy that space, and that pushes the body forward. The force So when so you are applying the force to create a space.
Mm.
And to fill that space, the air comes into that space.
Mm.
Because vacuum is not possible. See, it's going like this. So if you are pushing it like this, what happens is there is air everywhere.
Yes, sir.
Right? And there is a space created there.
Yes, sir.
So the air gets into that space, gushes into that space sort of.
Just kill this.
And then it produces a little more force. And that's how it works.
Are you clear with why vacuum is not present by Aristotle theory? Huh? See, what Aristotle told, that if there is, what is vacuum? No resistance. Resistance is zero. So, according to Aristotle, when you apply a force, it would move due to resistance. If there is no resistance, the body will move as long, means assume a frictionless surface, you are pushing a body. That body would continue moving, to infinity. Okay, but according to what did Aristotle told, that a finite force cannot create an infinite velocity. That was the reason why Aristotle was against the concept of void or empty space.
Aristotle also can move continuously. It will create again vacuum and it will again push it, so it will go to the body.
But according to him, air would also act as a resistant medium. No? It would also try to stop it, and the ground also may contribute in retarding the motion. No, that time friction was not.
So, how do you know that air also acts as a
resistant medium? Huh?
You only don't know, he also knows that air acts as
a resistant
medium.
He didn't
know
that.
He told. Of course, yes. He does. I mean, in the sense that
it resisting as a resisting of a medium.
Uses it as a resistance. Medium does resist. That's why he argues that it doesn't go on forever. So going forever, he considers is a kind of impossible.
हाँ, इसलिए तो गलत बोला ना कि उसने दोनों बोले कि propel भी कर रहा और resist भी कर रहा. इसलिए उन्होंने ये किया. तो यही मतलब तो नाउ लेट्स सी हाउ इम्पेटस थ्योरी एक्सप्लेन प्रोजेक्टर. व्हेन यू शूट एन एरो, इम्पेटस थ्योरी एक्सप्लेन दैट while shooting an arrow, in initial stages the impetus is greater than the air resistance. Means impetus means a driving force or an energy with which a body moves. Okay, as you leave an arrow, the impetus is greater than the air resistance, so it would move in a straight line because gravity would be insignificant at that point, because impetus initial
gravity.
They don't know, no, but see, what they are seeing in projectile motion, the body moves down. Okay, they just know that there is something that is pulling the object down. So that force is insignificant in the initial stage when the arrow is been left, means when arrow is shot.
They do have the motion.
Natural
motion. Right? One is the forced motion. The other is the natural.
So in this case,
so natural motion is towards its place of rest.
So in this case, there is no role of air.
Play no.
Friction.
See,
no,
in the initial stage,
yeah.
When the body is,
yes.
In the initial stage, the resistance is very less than the impetus. As soon as the body moves further, means the resistance of air goes on increasing, and the impetus goes on decreasing. And at the final stage, the impetus is zero and the body is fallen on the ground. That's how they explain the projectile motion by their theory. So after this theory, in the then came Galileo. Galileo was the first one who gave the accurate laws of motion. Means he explained three in his book The Moto, means the motion. He explained three important laws: the law of free fall, the law of inertia, and parabolic motion. Means he just gave the hint, and also about the inertia he just gave a hint. Means inertia was called later by Newton. So in his work about motion, there were three major experiments he did. First, I don't know the order, but let's see. Means there is a famous story called where he was at the Tower of Pisa, and he dropped two pound weight and 1 pound weight, and both of them fall together. That was the first experiment when he just dropped two spherical bodies of different mass, and means at that time he measured time using his pulse. So up to that precision, both the bodies fall at the same time.
So where was this experiment done? When was it done? By whom?
Huh?
This experiment that you mentioned.
Galileo.
Did he do it?
People say that.
People say that, but did you read it anyway?
No.
Then why are you talking about it? That's a nothing good story.
But
it's just in the air. Yes. You know, as you say.
But he had a thought experiment.
While you're preparing for this class, anywhere that Galileo performed this experiment. Is it written in D-Moto?
No, not about this experiment.
I have read D-Moto 4 times. He has never done this experiment.
Yes. Means he just did
a thought
experiment.
It wasn't even a thought experiment. There is no mention of the reading Tower of Pisa in all the works that he did. He lived in Pisa. True. But he never mentions about the Leaning Tower of Pisa. So, let's not add our story to it. Why is the story so famous? Because people propagated that story, just as Newton Apple. That's also as a story.
Sir, actually. Sir, actually, this was an extension to his wedge experiment. See, while doing his wedge experiment,
Wedge experiment.
So he started increasing the angle of the wedge, and when the angle was 90 degree, he said that the body would completely
That is inclined plane experiment. But that's not leaning curve, right?
Huh?
That's not the leaning curve.
No, that's not an extension. What? Means free fall, he was explaining
to us. He said that the free fall is an extension of the inclined plane, which is correct. Newton? Newton?
Okay. Second experiment.
In fact, he ran away from London, his place. I don't know if it was London, to his village, because there was plague.
Yes.
To save his life from plague. And he had nothing else to do except, enjoying nature and things like that. He was already working on these problems by the time he went there. So it's not just that the fall of Newton that he realized that.
Then Galileo did some wedge experiments. Means at a particular angle, he kept two wedges. one at greater theta 1 and theta 2, and let's assume that theta 1 is greater than theta 2. So and the wedges were made frictional, means the wedges were very smooth. How he did, I don't know. And he left one from this wedge experiment. He also proved that
the distance traveled by the body was proportional to square of its time.
And after this Newton, when read about these things, he just formulated it. I don't think he had done some experiments regarding this. He might have. I didn't got any experiments that Newton did on these things. I think it was a thought. He just formulated it and presented and gave the three laws. That's it. It was means he just put it in, means that was his thinking. The body could maintain its state of rest and uniform motion unless and until an external force. That was his thinking. And he gave the concept of acceleration.
How he
acceleration proportional to force.
Now how he proposed
third law. That was observation, means just thinking. Third law.
Is it really? I don't think so.
I don't know. I didn't got any matter on that.
So it was essentially a requirement for conservation. It was a technical requirement that the conservation can be. But my understanding is that Newton did not get everything from Galileo. So if one has to look at it, it's not that we could. In fact, if you read Wikipedia, you would not see his name anywhere. So you have to. I don't really think that these laws were actually because of Galileo. I don't think so. There's an enormous amount of work that is coming later. So we should not discredit Newton for that. And another thing, of course, that you know, this equations that he drew were post-calculus. So it wasn't possible to put down these equations without calculus.
Principia also has some development of calculus. Principia?
Of course, yes. So that's why. So it is along with the calculus that the theory and the laws have been put forward. It's not independent of that.
Mm-hmm.
And calculus is not known to Galileo. I mean, though except the Archimedean kind of calculus, which is they know about the limits. And differential calculus is completely new. They have no idea about any other questions? Of course. Thanks.
What experiment did you
do? Which one?
Did you actually have to do?
Pardon?
What experiment did you do?
What experiment? Newton. I don't think Newton's mechanics is because of experiments. Newton's optics is experimental. It's mostly mathematical. He has enough data already available from various other people's works. So it's basically mostly mathematical. But optics is experimental. Of course. This book has Entropy excerpts. Yeah, there was a we have a version of him on that. And then, you know Ramchandran? Chandrasekhar. So, he wrote a commentary on the entire Wikipedia with original text.
that's another very good source to understand Newton's contribution. So you must read when you have time, you must be having the library. Otherwise, we have it in our library as well. Okay, Amit?
That was tried already, but I think we have to put the driver properly. Is this installed?
Oh,
he didn't.
Oh,
he check me. Yeah, he didn't. You can come and stand on this side. Just turn the monitor around. So we'll be able to see some of those pictures. What happened, guys? How are you doing?
Okay, thanks, Master Anish Sharma.
and I will see the topic of my presentation is evolution of the theory of evolution. So the topics we are going to cover under this presentation are the word evolution, how this word evolution has evolved over time, and after this the voyage of the Beagle. Beagle was the name of the ship in which Darwin had traveled, and where he got the idea of this evolution, of his evolutionary theory. Then what observations which he made while his trip, and then Darwin's theory of evolution, contributors to Darwin's thinking, inspirations to Darwin's theory of evolution, objections and supports, predictions which his theory had made, and conceptual changes, evidences and advancement which were laid by this theory, and after that the references which I used. Okay, so the word evolution, it has its root in Latin word evolvere, and which means to unroll. So actually, and its usage is in form of evolutio, which means unrolling of a scroll in order to read it. Actually, scroll was a form of book in those days. The books were actually in form of rolls. So unrolling of that roll was named as evolutio. So in 1614, this Henry Moore, he in his work, he mentioned this word evolution for the first time, and the meaning was unrolling of vast records of time. So he maintained the same meaning of unrolling of scrolls, but at that time the scrolls were no more in use, books had replaced it. So he kept that meaning, but he used it in terms of unrolling of time. So the sentence was, the whole evolution of ages from everlasting to everlasting is represented to God at once. Okay. So in 1962, this Bonnet, he used this term evolution, which meant as being. I'll read out the sentence and I'll make it clear. What does it mean? Living things develop as the germ contained in the living organism unfolds itself in order to pass from the embryonic state. So by this time the it was believed that the forms are not developed, they are present. So the embryo, embryonic stage is the miniature form of a developed human. So only it's only the matter that it unfolds itself, it doesn't develop, and no changes are observed in the development process. So this was the this reflects the actually thoughts and views which were present at that time. Again, in 1791, this evolution term was used as development, and it was used by Erasmus Darwin, who was the grandfather of Charles Darwin. So the sentence was, the gradual evolution of the young animal or plant from the egg or seed. So here again, the developmental process was termed as evolution, and so it was the development of individual.
Development of plants from seed.
Yes, plants from seed. Even animal from the embryo.
That was.
Yes, evolution was used in term of development of individual, not for the population or the species. And in 1831, this Lyell, he had used the term evolution as a process or result of process. So the sentence was, certain organisms of the oceans existed first until some of them by gradual evolution were improved into those inhabiting the land. So here we can clearly see the conceptual change of the word evolution itself. And finally, this Charles Darwin, in his work, he used this term evolution. So he must have got this idea of evolution, long trend of evolution of the word evolution from his grandfather as well as Lyell and all other thinkers.
What about Lamarck?
Lamarck, yes sir, actually his statement, actual statement I could not get. These were the statements which were used.
No, because Lamarck very clearly, explicitly
talks about theory. Yes sir, but I didn't get any clear cut explanation or any clear cut definition made by him about evolution. So the statement made by Darwin about evolution is, evolution is the slow gradual change in the population of organisms over time, and this is the definition which we still use in our works as well as our studies. So he published his book in 1859, The Origin of Species by Means of Natural Selection of the Preservation of Favored Races in the Struggle of Life. And actually, for his trip on HMS Beagle, his professor Henslow, he had recommended for unpaid position, so that he was able to go through that voyage on HMS Beagle. So this is the route which was followed there, and here we can see the time. Actually, the route started from Plymouth, Britain, and then it extended through Atlantic Ocean, it all along the coast of South America, then going northwards, and then going moving west, which became the east actually. So from Australia and then again here. So it took 5 years, and various places where the ship stopped actually. So this Darwin kept on collecting specimens and looking at the making observations, drawing diagrams, and all kind of observations which he made led him to the conclusions about his theory, which later led him towards the theory of evolution. And most important thing, that while his voyage, he had that book written by Lyell, which I'll talk about that later on. He got the ideas from so many sources.
One interesting thing that you should look at,
yes,
the path.
Yes,
if you go back to the picture, see the path, goes to the,
yes,
it's entirely below the equator.
Yes.
At least for the path of that he's crossing. So that's also actually is one of the important reasons. The kind of data that he collected was enormous because of the kind of variety that you have below the equator. Because the variety that you have above the equator, the below the equator, is so important. Because the most of the flora and fauna are found in that area, particularly Africa, South America. And then the most important thing is he's covering several continents. That's very important. Because he's covering several continents, he used the geographical information by Lyell and others in his theory. He's trying to understand that it's quite possibly that, you know, these continents also play a very important role in speciation. That is because of the separations.
Yes, and so many places which they had gone, actually they were untouched. None else had gone to those places. So he could find very new forms of species from at those places, which were not recorded before. So what observations he made while his trip? So first was variation of species in space at the same time. Means within a certain period, the changes he found at different places, he found it variations actually in various species. I have taken the example actually, while the ship was moving southward along the coast of South America, so he found that there was a gradual change in the species, different from the species. And if we compare the species at the northern tip of South America, they were very much different from that of southern tip. But while looking at the gradual change, one can clearly understand that there is a variation in the species, and that change is gradual actually. The other was variation of species in time at the same place. So again, he saw that he found some fossils actually, and those fossils resembled the present forms. One of those fossils was of an organism which was which resembled modern armadillos. So he thought that there must be some change in the past forms which have resulted present species. So this variation was also recorded.
Armadillo.
It's a form of armored creature actually. It has very hard shell. So nowadays.
So it's one of the antelope species.
Yes. Actually, in India we find a very similar creature. It's pangolin, but its armor is so much different from it. So
they mostly live under the and they feed on various kinds of insects, mostly ants.
they have a long protein.
Yes, some of them have this.
So the fossil so
bones. Of course, since they are burrowing, they all had a very long snout.
And the third observation was variation at the same time at almost the same place with special local conditions. So this he actually concluded by looking at various finches and those iguanos and iguanas and tortoises. He found that within a certain limited area, if the environmental conditions were different, suppose actually there were some islands which he observed. Those islands were very much geographically separated from each other. So the species which were found there, they were very much different from each other, and none was found at both the places. So he thought that there must be something related to the environmental condition, which leads to the change in the characters of species. So this was the third observation there. So these are the finches actually which he had recorded. Actually they were 14, but here in this diagram only 10 have been shown. So he saw that the main character of the bird, it was similar, but the color as well as beaks, they differed from each other. Although they were named as different species, but there was something common in them, and which was due to their being favorable to the environment. The kind of insects they got there, as well as the seeds which they fed on, and the kind of environment that was favorable to the particular species which was found at that island. Again, these iguanas, they were different on different islands. Their forms were different. And these tortoises, the land was very much close, but it was geographically isolated for these tortoises. So on each island, different form was formed. You can see the shell as well as the neck of these tortoises. They were different. So he evolved his theory of evolution, actually, making conclusions on this. Actually, he didn't reach to the conclusions very quickly, but he took long years to reach other conclusions. So main postulates of his theory were struggle for existence among individuals. So due to production of more individuals that can be supported by the environment, there is a struggle of, for existence, and this leads to the survival of the fittest. So those are fittest, those individuals which are fit for the environment, they survive while others perish. This means that the whole of generation do not carry on to the whole generation do not lead to the next generation. Only some of them participate in that. So this is implied from survival of the fittest even. And there are variations in population, and no two individuals in a population are completely alike. Some variations are there in each and every form. So this is also a cause of evolution. And natural selection, it plays its role because of unequal ability of all the individuals to participate in the next generation, actually. And only the fittest, it's actually nature which selects the individuals and who participate for the next generation. And the transmission of characters are based on this natural selection. And the unequal ability of individuals to survive and reproduce leads to a gradual change in the population with favorable characteristics accumulating over generations, and this leads to evolution
and
of
the problem. Normally it is understood is that if you use the term it's actually the nature that selects,
yes,
you lead to a misconception, because actually there is no selection by nature, because nature is not an agent.
Yes, sir. It's not an agent, but it's a factor.
That nature actually is selected.
Yes.
So all that one has to say is that it happens spontaneously, and that spontaneity is called natural.
Natural. Okay.
So when you're calling about natural selection, it's the spontaneity of that selection and the absence of an agent.
Okay, sir.
So when you are understanding natural selection, it essentially means absence of an agent. As in artificial selection. So in artificial selection, there is something called some human being, you know, selecting a particular breed of dogs, and you know, he breeds those dogs or he breeds those cattle. And that is artificial selection. Whereas in this case, there is no selection action. So that's what we call natural. This means that happens spontaneously because of adaptation of the organism to that particular feature.
Yes. And there are actually adaptations in organisms, and these adaptations to new environmental conditions was through the mechanism of natural selection and development of features desired by prospective sexual partners through the mechanism of sexual selection. And the main thing which differs from other theories was that evolution does not have any intrinsic direction, that it is random, it is not guided by any predetermined direction towards evolution. Actually, my friend, he had mentioned about that, you were mentioning about that, actually it was implication of Lamarck's theory, it was not the implication of Darwin's. So there were some contributors to Darwin's thinking, Charles Lyell, he was a uniformitarianism, which means that geological processes are still changing the earth, and the earth is always uniform. It is whatever the changes are observed, these changes are going on from since the very beginning, and there is no beginning to the earth, it is as such. So this was the main postulate by Charles Lyell, but the changing of geological processes, these were taken up by him. And Georges Cuvier, so catastrophism theory was given by him, and species extinction was explained by Georges Cuvier. And Thomas Malthus, his essay on population, it gave him the idea of struggle for existence. And James Hutton, he gave the idea of gradualism. Again, John Baptist Lamarck, his inheritance of acquired characters and law of these use and disuse of organs, it was known to Darwin, so he must have got the idea of inheritance of characters. But although the mechanism behind it was different from that postulated by Lamarck. Again, this Wallace, he had this Wallace had published a paper along with Darwin about this evolutionary theory, and his contribution was organisms evolved from common ancestors. So we'll actually this theory says that actually Earth had been very hot in the initial stage. Now during the cooling form, now it's the cooling stage of the Earth. It is cooling at the surface while it's still hot, and in liquid form in the center of Earth. So due to this lag and due to this difference of the temperature and difference of the liquidity and hardness of rock, there becomes a gap between the liquid layer as well as the solid layer. And due to that lag, actually the upper layer, it collapses inside, and this is catastrophism. And due to this, several species, they get destroyed, and certain areas are hilly, some are valleys, and these were the reasons why fossils are found embedded within the rocks. So this was explained by catastrophism.
See, these are the geographical observations that were made before Darwin, because Darwin was highly influenced by geography, geological information, by land and animals. So he had enormous amount of data apart from his beagle, lot of data from paleontology, which is the lot of fossils, and then how were the fossils were formed, and the kind of features that were described. Because these events happened at a very early stage of the Earth, and so the kind of beings that were found in those fossils, so none of them are actually present in the current time. And so they thought of putting all these facts together. The other important thing that you will see here is that the essence of Darwin's theory actually doesn't come from biology. The essence of Darwin's theory comes from economics and social science. And that is this guy, Malthus. So Malthus was an economist. And interestingly, if you look at it, the
the theory about the struggle for existence comes because of the belief in conservation. So the conservation of resources. Let us say if you take any area and if you have some population, okay, what is the resource that is available? Let us say the food, the space that is available is limited. If it is unlimited, then there will be no struggle for existence. So it is because of the limited nature of the resources that there is struggle for existence. And Darwin uses that idea for biological case as well.
Sir, actually I have taken up all those cases one by one. So sir, actually I have mentioned in one of those slides.
Right.
So this was the evolutionary timeline. This indicates the period of that contributor, and the Darwinism actually it's here. So all these ideas were which were related to geology as well as astronomy as well as biology, they were very much known to Darwin, and they had contributed a lot to his theory. And there was certain inspirations actually from different fields: philosophy, astronomy, geology, economy, physics, embryology, paleontology, genetics and mathematics. One by one we will look how these contributions were made. So first one of course is Plato. He had an idea that according world attained its present form not by a single creative act but by a slow process over long ages. Although actually this term is implicit of evolution, although the term was not used. So he had an idea actually about evolutionary process. Although this Aristotle, he differed in the views. He said that species were first creations arranged by their complexity, and he was supporter of creationism, that God had created everything and everything stay as such. There are no changes in the or variations in the species, not even the living organism, but the whole world as well as whole universe is as such. It is created, it's not evolved from anything. And now this Buffon, and actually he was a geologist as astronomist as well as physicist. So he had made speculations about the evolution of biological species in the framework of the grand scheme of the origin and physical development of Earth as a catastrophic event. So he has taken the evolution of Earth as well as living organisms on in the same broad framework of catastrophism. That how Earth evolved and how species must have originated. So he rejected Aristotelian final cause, that there is a final cause to everything and God has created everything. All things that can exist do exist regardless of their usefulness to organisms. So this was contrary to Aristotelian idea. Again, this James Hutton, he was father of modern geology, and he proposed the theory of Plutonism and uniformitarianism related to geology and geological time. So according to Plutonian, actually there were two views, Neptunism as well as Plutonism. So Neptunism, they were actually supporters of biblical flood, that 6000 years ago there was a great flood, before that everything was covered underwater, and there was only after that the earth actually precipitated out of water. This was the main thing which was in Neptunism theory, that earth has precipitated out of water. But this Plutonism, they maintain that no, earth has not originated out of water. Actually it's due to the cooling up of earth as well as certain other processes which have led to the gap between the surface layer as well as the earth's core, and this has led to catastrophic events, and these have led to the formation of earth's present state. So they don't maintain any flood theories. They say that it's due to cooling or other agents that rocks are formed. Again, this Georges Cuvier, he was a geologist as well as paleontologist. So he worked in
fossil study.
So fossils were already in field actually before Darwin. So he came to that thing while doing his work. Paleontology comprising living organisms, living animals and fossils. So he had already compared fossils with the living forms of animals. and he was proponent of catastrophism in geology, established that extinction was a fact. So he explained why certain species are extinct now. So Charles Lyell, he was a great contributor to Darwin's theory. According to him, his theory was uniformitarian theory, that all the laws of nature are which are present now, they had remained always in that form, and everything needs to be explained into within that framework. And the magnitude of geological forces have never been significantly different than at present date. He excluded cooling earth theories, although he didn't say that earth is cooling. He says that whatever temperature is at present, it has remained in that form forever. This Carl Linnaeus, actually we know him through his binomial system of nomenclature. In his system of nature, he had given that binomial system of nomenclature. But there was some lacuna in his theory actually. In his system, he didn't give any theory actually. So he says, each species was created in its present form by God for definite purpose and is immutable. So again, that Aristotelian idea of creation is misfollowed by him. He says that whatever forms are present, they have been as such, and these are created by God. And although in his later work he has suggested the possibility of hybridization in animals as well as different forms. And one very important thing which he did was, he didn't give humans as a very special form of creation. He says that humans are in level with other animals. So humans were animals according to him, and he even placed humans with apes in the same, apes and sloths in the same order in the class of quadrupeds. So this was very important thing which he had done. Of course, this Jean-Baptiste Lamarck's theory was very much, although not very much known, but it came before Darwin. So he had following postulate that nature tends to increase the size of living individuals to a predetermined limit. So he thinks that nature acts in a predetermined form. There are no randomness in the evolution, but something which is predetermined, that this much height of the species is to be attained. So this is one important thing which he made, although this is not true at present, but it was his idea. So the tendency towards perfection, organisms are continually arranging and acquiring features that help them live more successfully in their environment. So according to him, that it's the will of the organism which leads him to change, and variations are due to the will of organisms. And of course we can see his idea in giraffes, that giraffes had their shorter necks first, but because they had a will to eat the leaves of plants which are high enough, so they extended their neck, and they were able to lead to that stage. So so he proposed this use and disuse of organs, that the development reached by the organisms is directly proportional to the extent to which they are used, that the organs which we use more, they develop more and they pass to the next generation. Inheritance of acquired characters, everything acquired by the individual is transmitted to its offsprings. And progressive development of species from simple to complex form, branching off in different directions depending on local environmental conditions. So this leads to new species. This was his idea actually. And this Erasmus Darwin, who was Charles Darwin's grandfather, he had also contributed a lot towards biology and evolutionary field. So he examined what was the thing which brings changes in different animals actually, and which make them well adapted to their environment. So he concluded that the changes are due to development, artificial cultivation, climate, before birth changes by crossing. And he gave the idea that all animals undergo perpetual transformations which are in part produced by their own exertions, and many of these forms are transmitted to their posterity. So his main idea was in accordance to Lamarck's theory. So he says that due to their own exertions, they bring about changes in themselves, and the changes are imparted to the next generation. And Joseph Fourier, yes sir. Okay, James Fourier, he gave a formula and he estimated that the age of Earth was between 130 to 300 million years. And Thomas Malthus, his essay on population, he gave the idea of struggle struggle for existence to this Darwin. And Wallace, actually, he they both published the article together. And he both these Darwin as well as Wallace, they reached the same conclusion of struggle of existence and all these ideas together. Although he didn't have that much, what should I say, evidences as much as Darwin had. And Thomas Henry Huxley, actually it was him, he who had actually defended Darwin's theory. Everywhere, in every conference, he had actually defended and he corrected all the evidences for that theory, which was given by Darwin. Some objections were given by different fields actually. Objection was made by Kelvin. He had estimated that the Earth's age was only 100 million years, while Darwin had said that it must have taken 300 million years for the present evolved form. So he had made the objection. But after the after radioactivity was discovered, so it was found that the Earth's age was about 3 billion years, which was even 10 times more than Darwin. So evolutionary time was okay after the discovery of radioactivity. So an objection was made by Jenkin. He said that if there are chance variation in a single individual, so being adopted by the population, it would take infinitesimally longer period, and that chance is very small that it would be a small variation in a single individual is distributed in the whole population. So this made Darwin assume that the environmental factors common to the entire population will lead to the adaptation. Although after the theory of after genetics theories which were made by Mendel, it was well maintained that the characters, even if they are recessive, they don't lose in the gene pool. They always maintain, they are always there, and when they become homologous, then they show their characters. And due to natural selection, those characters would become explicit later on. So, and from paleontology, actually, some fossils were, linear fossils were found for horses, in which there were actually 5 fossils where from 4-toed to single-toed presence horse. On the whole lineage, it showed that there was gradual variations in the species within a long period of time. And even he found that Archaeopteryx missing link, so it established that even the different looking forms of orders and classes, they are somewhere linked together. So this was the Archaeopteryx fossil which was found. Again, the human fossils which were found, they also developed that even humans, they had evolved from previous forms which were not much similar to humans, but which were more similar to the apes and other orangutans, etc. So this was also an evidence. And this finding of fossils also, this also discredited that creationism theory, which had maintained that humans did not exist before 6,000 years ago. So this was also taken as a proof for evolutionary theory. And this embryological support that ontogeny repeats, recapitulates phylogeny. He says that within the, actually the development trend of embryos, they follow the evolutionary trend of species. And in these examples of sea lamprey, pond turtle, chicken, domestic cat and human being, every embryo has gills actually. Although these are not in use in cats and these humans and chicken, but they are still present in embryological stage. So although it's not used in higher forms, developed from form of individuals, but these are an evidence to evolutionary theory. And even the homologous organs, they are the.
I think you have to wind up.
Okay, sir. Actually, this is just
last. What to do is, I need to upload this presentation on the website. Okay, sir. Okay. And then, scope is
okay. Sir, just the conclusions, actually, the conceptual change which the theory has. That it has changed from creationism to evolution. And common descent from to many diverse organic forms. Species are inconstant. Change in forms of species, adaptation through natural selection, and transmission of favorable characters through sexual selection, and from essentialism to population thinking. Essentialism, it had maintained that individuals of a species are certainly alike for certain approximation of of type is there, actually ideal type is there, and all individuals are in one or form alike that type form. All the but this has
some kind of accumulation.
Yes, sir. Although this had discredited that thing, and they say that species is a collection of different unique individuals, and evidences used were fossils, radioactive dating, and records of variation species in response to different difference in environment, and comparative embryology, homologous character, and genetics. They gave the evidences there, and the advancements which this theory made were actually it clearly discarded the creationists.
Sir, you are all winding up the university.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, thanks. So that was the last presentation. Next presentation, we don't have passing experts.
Okay, thanks, sir. So next week I will upload some specific questions for the final exam. Okay. So you'll have one clear week for focused presentations. Okay. I'll give a list of them. No, I haven't given. I will give by this day next week. On Wednesday, you will find them on the website. You want it before? No, no, but that is already announced, right? Because you at least have the topics ready. Topics are already given to you. So it will be from the same topics. Okay, anyway. Yeah, meeting started possibly at 10:30. So I sent a letter of objection. You know, I think you have to sit with Smita. You tell them how to use it. Tell them how to use it. And ask them to. See, look, everybody needs training, you know, it's not just those people, but why don't have an office? Sumanna can maintain my calendar also, right? I don't have to be trained in this process. Sumanna, I inform Sumana, let's say for example I have some appointment, then Sumana can modify the calendar for everybody. Asmita can do it. Mastaka can do for the places. Mastaka's office, I mean. So everybody has to be trained. So Manoj has already made that calendar for, I mean, cannot calendar, I mean, for the allocation of space. Are they using it?
No.
No, if they are using it, then there is, why should there be a clash today? Between Vijay Singh's Yeah, Vijay Singh came in the morning and he was already doing, taking a class when our class started.
No, I said they are doing booking system. Haan, so wohi na, woh bhi hai. Usme clashing.
No, that actually happened because Vijay Singh was with it wasn't announced also. That facility wasn't announced. People don't know that the facility exists.
It's announced. Yeah, users to make it, yeah. Aniket ne.